All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Move Podcast. Today, we're talking about the 2023 Liège, Bastogne-Liège, the old lady, as they call it, the oldest classic in the world, which is, well, that was actually news to me. Won by just an exceptional, and I mean, and I think we all agree here, just a, it was sort of two different races going on, an exceptional Remco Evenepoel who, you know, probably came in and certainly did some things for salvaging Quick-Step's spring campaign. I'm joined over there in Greenville, South Carolina, Mr. George Hincapie. George, it's been a minute. How you doing, man?
It has been. We were together three days ago in Tuscany. Yep.
Yeah, we flew back on Delta Airlines, and George was not happy. He was in first class, and he was, you know, he got off and he said, "This first class was just not acceptable."
And then Lance had the pilot coming back there talking to him.
Yeah, I did. I appreciated that. The captain sent a nice note. The captain lived in Auburn, where I was headed to right after we landed for Bo's ride, which was awesome. Good to see him and hundreds and hundreds of riders that showed up to support that great cause. But yeah, I didn't get a chance to, he's like, I guess his house was on the course, by the way. If anybody's looking for a beautiful bike ride in the Southeast, that I will say Bo Bikes, Bama. The route is surprisingly, I mean, not that I expected to be riding through the city, but it's gorgeous. Highly recommend that.
I would be remiss if I didn't tell just a quick story, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Lance. I'm sitting on the plane, my connection from Atlanta to Greenville, and the man never, ever answers the FaceTime or even considers answering the FaceTime. All of a sudden, he's FaceTiming me. So I'm like, why is Lance FaceTiming? Why the place? Like, where are you? Pick up the phone. So I pick up the phone. He's like, which way does the through-by thread out to get my bike off of the bike bag? He had no idea how to take his bike and put it back together. I mean, the man's been riding a bike for, I don't know, 30 something years. And then he blamed me for breaking his bike in Milan because I packed it for him because his back was apparently hurting. So that was my connection to Greenville, getting yelled out by Lance Armstrong on FaceTime, people listening to the call, blaming me for breaking his bike.
Yeah. Well, it's, and folks, all of that actually has the added benefit of being totally true. Every bit of it, 100%. I have bad back. Didn't know how to pack a bike in this swanky case that George made me order, and I couldn't get the damn thing out. And so, yeah, I needed Bulge. What can I say? I was, anyways, it got fixed. I got it put together, did the ride. It was cool. And by the way, I'm here in Austin, Texas, and I don't know if y'all know or not, but I'm a deeply spiritual man. So as you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see behind me, I'm just, as it is Sunday, I'm here in church. Just about to do it, whatever they do. It is an old church. Isn't this amazing? Been turned into a really killer party venue. I've never been to a party here, but.
Very white themed.
It's very white. It's very white. Maybe George, I'll FaceTime you later if you'll pick up.
Yeah, do it.
Also in Austin, Texas, JB Hager. JB, you're like two streets away. I kind of feel like we should have done this together, like the old, JB and Sandy days.
He's referencing the old radio show I was part of,
which was a huge hit. And over there in Madrid, Johan Bruniel, who for you members got a little sneak peek at just how Johan has totally managed to reverse age. He came on the show with one of these like a fox head on his, like, digitally imposed on his head. It was for those who think the man is so serious and, you know, really cracked the whip. No. Not at all.
And for those who are not in the membership, like, when you can get the pre-show, it's been no holds barred lately with Johan.
Right. and we've rebranded it and renamed it. It's now called the Members Meeting. We want this to feel like it is a team. It's a pre-show meeting and like a pre-production meeting, but almost like a team meeting where you kind of hear stuff that you probably wouldn't. Not that we ever hold back on this show, but even in the members meeting, it sort of goes from PG-13 to R+. Today's show brought to you by Element. We talk about it all the time. And George and I, of course, we just spent 5 days in Tuscany riding, just hammering the Element. And I also joke all the time that I sweat a lot. And George took every opportunity to make fun of the amount of sweat that this man was putting out But I did win best improved rider over there. But as far as hydration and rehydration, Element is the way to go. 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. No sugar, no gluten, no artificial ingredients, no BS. It is the real deal. Special offer for our listeners. You get to try out the sample pack. So the sample pack includes one of every flavor. That's citrus, raspberry, orange, and unflavored. You can kind of figure out which one you like best. Head on over to drinklmnt.com/themove. Get your free gift with purchase. Again, that's drinklmnt.com/themove. Also today brought to you by Ventum, and also was very present on our bike trip over there in Italy. The new Ventum, I got to say, I've ridden what George just tried to call me out on a second ago. It's actually been 36 years or 37 years that I've been riding bikes competitively. This new NS1, I can't say enough about it. And of course, it once I finally got it put back together, it was awesome at Bobikes Bama. It's fast, it rides well, it's comfortable, it handles amazing. Dia and the whole crew over there have done a bang-up job. And not to mention, the GS1, their gravel bike, is equally as fast and equally as comfortable. So what makes this brand different, right? Not only are they kicking ass, they have dedicated customer support to help you out at every step of the purchasing process. They're also producing great content. If you need any inspiration to go out there and ride, check out their socials on Instagram and YouTube. That's at Ventum Racing. Special offer, get 10% off when you use the code WEDO at checkout over at ventumracing.com/themove. Last one here for a bit. Athletic Greens, another one we religiously use. And it was cool to see, you know, George and I know we always talk about this stuff, but we would find each other every day down in the kitchen at this house we were staying in Tuscany, mixing up our morning batch of AG1. And it's this, again, the stuff that has been proven to work. All the smarts out there talk about how it is just an amazing supplement and an amazing protocol, basically, to be on. It's really been a game changer for myself and George. 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. Help you start your day off just right, and also help you take control of your health, all for less than $3 a day. Let's make it easy. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is head on over to athleticgreens.com/themove. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/themove. Well, back-to-back victories for Remco Evenepoel, and this one, much like last year, was just pure and complete domination. And we'll talk about it in a sec, but even with some complications, I mean, I don't think that's how he on La Redoute. He had some slippage, what I saw. I don't know how many folks caught it, but when he went to make the first serious acceleration, he actually made it. And for those who don't know, the rain had started to come down. When the fans come out and paint the roads, right, they're just buying paint at the hardware store and going, you know, he actually made the move over a fairly large section of solid white spray paint that had been on the roads. And you just saw he lost the wheel. And to have the composure and the patience to sit back and say, okay, that's not going to work, and just wait for the moment. But it really didn't matter, right? At the end of the day, Johan, he was a man amongst boys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we should start, Lance, with the first important event of the day, which was the crash of Tadej Pogacar, right? And from that moment on, so he crashed after 80 kilometers, I think, abandoned. And from that moment on, it was basically, you know, the suspense of the day was going to be, when will the Remco Evenepoel show start?
Mm-hmm.
And it happened as expected on La Redoute. I think amazing job of his team, first of all, to keep the race under control and, you know, just with one rider left and basically lead him out. You could see there was, I think on La Redoute, you could say there's probably 10 riders really riding for a place, and then the rest were just dead bodies. And from that moment on, Remco took off. I saw that also, that slipping of the wheel. He said it in the post-race interview. The course was changed a little bit, you know, so he attacked a little earlier than last year, because on the top of the climb, they took a right instead of a left, like last year. But the result was the same, you know, same distance, a little less than 30 kilometers from the finish. He went and just time trialed to the end. I mean, pure domination, I say. And then, you know, basically the most interesting thing was, the, you know, the rest of the guys, who's going to be on the podium, which was an interesting race. But it was to be expected. You know, I've heard information that on the training camp in on the Teide, Remco broke all of his records. All of his records, all of his best values, he broke them. On Friday, 2 days before the race, he did a tryout on La Redoute, set a new KOM on La Redoute 2 days before the race.
Well, there was some, yes, that I did hear that. There was some debate because he was simulating the race, so he actually motor pasted. So they, I don't know if they took it down or if he didn't post it, but definitely set a new KOM, but was trying to simulate race speed. So he came into it on the wheel of a moto. So, but nonetheless, I mean, when you're going up La Redoute and it's that steep, you could have an 18-wheeler in front of you. You still got to pedal uphill.
Yeah. Apparently, a couple of weeks before the race, he actually pulled all of this stuff off of Strava. Mm-hmm. And what would that indicate? That he's going so good that he doesn't want his competition to know how good he's going? Because if they knew the times he was setting and how good he's going, then it was kind of already like that, but then it's everybody against him. Like, there's no reason to actually help him in the early parts of the race. So he took it off, which is quite interesting, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's smart. I think it's smart. You know, I mean, why would you? Why would you publish your performances on training? You know, you're living, it's in a competitive environment. And so everybody looks at everybody. They already can see how good you are in the races. So, you know, and I think the weird thing about this is also, you know, Remco wins now Liège-Bastogne-Liège, but he was during 3 weeks, like literally 50 meters away from his main rival in the Giro, Primoz Roglic, on the Teide. So I'm guessing they know both pretty well how good they are. But yeah, I mean,
so are they staying at the same hotel or
same hotel? Yeah, same hotel.
So there's only one hotel. I believe I heard correctly on the coverage. It's now fully booked through, I think they said 2030.
Well, I think that was a joke, Lance. I don't.
Look, for any of you hotel entrepreneurs out there, and I don't.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it might be difficult to, because it is. I mean, the hotel they stay in, which I have stayed in probably, you know, 200 nights of my life, way back in the day. It's been there forever. It's an old Parador. I don't know what the restrictions are, but you would think, with all that demand, somebody's out there looking or remodel. There are a few houses up there. You could remodel the houses, but if you could have a private place up there. I mean, it must be a little awkward over breakfast every day. You're looking across at your big rival, but nonetheless, I want to go back to the Strava thing for a second. I'm torn on this. Because you look at it from a fan's perspective, and I know from a competitive standpoint, you don't want your rivals knowing how either really good you are or not so good you are, right? There's a difference. But from a fan's perspective, it's kind of cool. Like I know what Johan would have been. There would have been a lockdown law, like
a ban on Strava.
Yeah, everybody would have been banned from posting on Strava. But from a fan's perspective and from our perspective, people just trying to sit here and glean how these guys are doing in training, it's pretty awesome. So I'm torn. I'm sure those teams also have a pretty strict policy on what to post and not to post.
Yeah, and there's something to say about these guys, someone like Remco showing up to Liège-Bastogne. He has all the pressure in the world being a Belgian rider, all essentially making it look easy. The win made it look easy, but what the fans aren't seeing is he spent the last month at the top of some mountain by himself, maybe with a coach, with a trainer, maybe one other teammate or two other teammates, and that's hard living. I mean, it's very tough. It's very lonely. It's a lot of hard work, and you know, that's the things that, you know, we know, Lance and I know very well, and so does Johan, but you don't see that come race day with all the hard work you put in.
Do you guys think we're going to see a trend more towards spending time at altitude versus racing as preparation?
We're seeing it. Absolutely. We're seeing it now.
That happened. That's been going. JB, I mean, it not as serious as it is now, but 20 years ago in our day and age, that was a thing, you know, and you know, the Teide, which is the volcano on Tenerife there, which is in the Canary Islands, which is part of Spain, which is actually way down off the coast of Africa, is hard to get to. So, you know, in the old days, you know, folks would, you know, shoot for Sierra Nevada, but it's not nearly as hard and as many options as there is.
And it's also because of, in the spring, the climate within Europe, it's the only place where you can go until April. You know, otherwise you can go to the Etna or to Sierra Nevada. But because of the weather, Tenerife is so popular. Now, speaking of altitude, so I don't know if you guys heard, but straight after this race, he goes now for 10 days between now and the Giro. He goes to the south of Spain. He has a house in around Calpe. He lives there now. But he goes to spend 10 days in the hotel of, what's his name again? This Kolobnev, the Russian guy.
Yeah.
The hotel with the altitude rooms.
So, and just so I remember this, that is the hotel that Alexander Vinokurov funded with the payoff from Liège-Bastogne years ago. That's the same. I think I've mentioned that before, but, you know, I digress. I want to go back to Pogačar for a sec, because he's been so dominant, and coming into this thing, we didn't expect that same domination because, of course, Remco's in this race, and somebody had to come salvage Quick-Step season. But you're kind of going, all right, this guy is that good. He is so much better than everybody else. And of course, you never want to see anybody crash, especially with the console or the outcome that he ended up with, which of course are broken bones and surgery this afternoon. But boy, did we miss out, and we can all sit around and try and guess and speculate and dream about what would have happened. But holy shit, this would have been firework. I don't see how, I mean, that Remco I saw and the Tadej Pogačar we've seen, you know, all season long, but especially the last week, I couldn't pick it. I don't know what happens.
I think they go together to the finish lines. You know, if you look on La Reduta, I think just look at Pidcock, right? Pidcock is he's close to Remco on La Reduta and comes back. If you see how much better Pogačar was in Pidcock and Amstel, so for sure Pogačar would have been on La Reduta with Remco, and then it's a matter of can Remco drop Pogačar, which he would have to try.
Unlikely.
Which
he would not be able to do.
That would have been very difficult. So I think it would have been a sprint.
Yeah. Well, then okay. Well, then
who's the better sprinter?
Well,
Pogačar.
Pogačar would have won that.
Listen, after a long Remco has improved a lot in his sprint. Also, you know, he was on those uphill finishes. I mean, flat sprints is different, of course. Yeah. Remco before the race said that. You know, I like that about the guy, that he's not shying away. He's not like, you know, oh, you know, well, Pogačar's the big favorite. I'm coming off altitude. He just goes in and says, hey, I'm great. I want to win.
Well, he straight up said, I'm not afraid of Tadej Pogačar. That was his quote.
And not even in the sprint. Right. He said, I would like to sprint to him with him. I'm not second by definition.
You watch his confidence in the race. I mean, he's got his teammates there. I mean, he's got one of the former most dominant rider in the world, Alaphilippe, pulling and basically ending his job with 60 kilometers to go. One of the best riders in the world, 60K to go, not even really in the final anymore.
Was one of the best riders.
Was, but still, I mean, he's Alaphilippe, and he can only make it till 60K to go. Not only that, but Remco is in second wheel, which we all know, second wheel, you're still doing more work than the guys in fourth and fifth and sixth wheel, which is where you want to be ideally, but he didn't care. He's just second wheel. Staying out of trouble, full of confidence, and we all knew what was going to happen. Like you said, Johan and Tour Flanders, like, there's no more surprise anymore. You know exactly what's going to happen, and we see it happening most of the time now.
Well, the reality is, it is because of the crash of Tadej Pogačar and because of the injury, and if you play it out the way we just played it out, we were probably robbed from one of the seeing one of the greatest Lieges in recent history. I mean, that would have been those two guys duking it out on all those climbs for the last hour of the race, and then trying to tactically figure out a flat sprint, right? Let's keep in mind, those are always very tactical. It's all about positioning, who goes first, and it didn't happen, right? And that sucks.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, we didn't get to see it, but I think we still saw an amazing race.
Yeah,
and I want to you know, give nice recognition today to Tom Pidcock. You know, I mean, the way that guy raced, he tried to follow Remco, came back. Then we kind of said, okay, he's bonking.
Yeah.
But in his post-race interview, I don't know if you heard it, he said, you know, I was on the limit, so I had to figure out, you know, do I try to hang on here and with the risk of blowing up? Or do I sit back and try to get on the podium tactically? That's what he did. I mean, I personally don't think, you know, bonking I don't think you can recover from that the way he did. You know, because he did come back on La Rochefoucauld to Ben Healy and Butrago, and then could stay there. So I don't know if he was. I mean, obviously he said he was. It was way too fast on the Côte de Forge for him with Remco. But I mean, he came. That guy knows how to race, man. I mean, he knows how to get the maximum.
Yep.
And such a good descender. You saw him just kind of obviously not being able to go with Remco initially, but came back on descent with relative ease. I mean, in the pouring rain, super technical descent, but it made up a lot of time there with arguably less effort than Remco was doing, but still just couldn't hold on to the wheel.
By the way, his first ever podium in a monument, which it's kind of hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
You would have thought there would have been, whether it's Lombardia or this race, you would have thought, even in his young career, he'll have plenty more of those in the future, if not the, you know, top step.
And again, the recurring theme of talking about young riders getting some success. Butrago is only 23 years old. Healy had a great spring season. He's been just hitting it for the last month.
Wow.
He's a young guy, I think 22 maybe.
22 years old, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's riding a wave of, and we of course talked about him during Amstel Gold Race and we're really rooting for him. You know, you see these riders, they get a little whiff, right? A guy like Ben Healy, maybe, you know, maybe he knew he was coming into form and thought maybe at Amstel he could be top 10, but they just get a whiff, right? Oh, so this is what it's like at the front of the race. And this is how cool it feels to stand on the podium. As soon as they get the whiff, like the good ones, the really good ones, the ones who will be around for a while, they're like, okay, I got it. I want to keep getting whiffs of that.
Do they start taking more risks?
Yeah.
It's like motivation super fuel. Like it's, and you saw it again today. And he did a great, or had a great interview after the race. And I think he ended up fourth or fifth. And he was happy with that. Yeah, it was fourth. He said, look, if you'd have told me 3 months ago you're going to get fourth in Liège, are you disappointed? And, you know, hell no, because he hadn't had the whiff.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't, you know, well, how about 3 months ago? He said, all right, how about second in Amstel and fourth in Liège? How do you feel about that? He hadn't had it.
On the other show we did, I think it was about, was it about Flash Wallon, I think. We had this picture. I think we could probably publish it. And I have a picture of 2017 of the Vuelta Vizcaya juniors. And it's Ben Healy winning, second Remco Evenepoel in Remco's first race internationally. Now, speaking of Ben Healy, you know, I would like to make a little comment on that.
I don't know if we should.
Yeah, it's gonna be it's okay. It's okay. I mean, that's my opinion.
Well, sometimes when you to sort of tee it up like that, we don't know if we need to put our earmuffs on or what.
Some people need to put their earmuffs on, or actually listen to what I'm gonna say. No. Ben Healy is 22 years old. He comes to the front of the scene. You know, he has these amazing results. I mean, I think he's super happy. His team is super happy. Now, what I hear is that they are going to put him in the Giro. Huge mistake, in my opinion. Huge mistake. You know, I think a guy like that, so young, who's coming up now, he's shown what he's worth, you know, in terms of these races. I think sending him to the Giro, This is a different game, the stage race. You have these guys who have been preparing specifically for that stage race. And I think personally, okay, if they sent him to the Giro with the intention of, you know, trying to win a stage early on and then go home, okay. But I think it's a mistake to send him to the Giro.
Johan, it's a new game now. It's all about the points. So they had Carapaz, they have Uran for the tour. They clearly got their tour team picked. Now they have perhaps, you know, a bonus. Hey, we can pick up some points at the Giro. We got a guy like Ben Healy who's in incredible shape, the shape of his life. Why not send him there, give him some Grand Tour experience, and hopefully get some points out of it as well?
Time will tell. I think I'm with Johan on that.
I think it's a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Before we should spend a little bit of time on just the lasting effects and impact of Tadej Pogačar's crash. I mean, look, we have to talk about it. It's big news. It's probably the second biggest, if not the biggest headline of this race. But we're only 2 months from the Tour de France. And mm-hmm. this was not, as we learned after the race, this is not, it wasn't a small crash. So, but before we do, today's show also brought to you by HVMN. Now, this is another one we actively use. It's funny. We were, not to keep talking about, it's almost like I'm bragging about riding my bike around Tuscany for a week with ballers like George and Craig Lewis and all these people. But I brought a whole stash of HVM in for the crew. And they, like Craig Lewis had never had any. One of our guides had never had any. Tommy, who was with us, had never had any. These motherfuckers, you'd have thought they were shot out of a cannon. They were like, why do I feel so good? I'm being dead. George, back me up. I'm being dead serious.
Yeah, they had never tried it. We gave it to them at one of the second to last days on the at one of our coffee shops, and they were flying on the way home.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, Tom, by the way, Tommy's about 210 pounds, and the climbs are like 20%, and he was hammering. I mean,
yeah.
That's an anecdote that we can talk about, but the science is there. The proof is in the pudding, as well as the fact that, you know, upwards of 60% of this Peloton are active users of Ketone IQ. Not just us, but also the special forces. By the way, they just got a $6 million contract with the U.S. Special Ops Command, which is pretty badass. Hey, they're also available now at Sprouts throughout the United States. Head on over to hvmn.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE. That gets you 20% off. Again, that's hvmn.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE. And I also saw on their Instagram yesterday, since I'm in Austin, selling a lot of it down at Mellow Johnny. So if you're here in Austin, you can just run over to MJ's. Last one of the day, brought to you by Manscaped. George actually travels full time. I didn't realize this until I was just on this trip with him. He actually carries his Manscaped with him.
Yep, everywhere I go.
Just to tone up that beard. But on a serious note, April is Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, which is great for Manscaped to jump in and help support, obviously, a cause that's near and dear to my heart. They partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to remind you to check your golden nuggets this month for anything not so golden. And while you're down there, shave your balls while you save your balls. I mean, I thought I was irreverent. These Manscaped people, I gotta hang out with these people. This is amazing. So let's support a good cause and go to manscaped.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE to get 20% off plus free shipping. Again, that's manscaped.com and use the code THEMOVE to get 20% off. I almost want to say that last line again about shaving and saving your balls. It just, look, I mean, anyways. And for the female listeners that we have, we don't, you know, we're about 20% female listenership. I am sorry if that's offensive, but if you're married or have a partner or whatever, you know, think about them. And we're still trying to get George to do that. We are this summer. It's gotten to a point where we've talked about it enough and fucked with him enough. George, you're doing it.
We're going to get the beard trim on one of the
No.
Or the members meeting.
About the silhouette behind the white screen, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So after the race, the Mauro Giannetti, who's the GM of Team UAE, said that I think he said multiple fractures in the wrist and one other slight injury, but you know, it'll be interesting. Look, of course they're doing the surgery probably as we speak, which is the right thing to do. Just get it over with, start the recovery process. And of course now in a day and age when, you know, Zwift and all the indoor options are so prevalent and so effective, can do that. Here's my thing, and I'll put this out there. My only fear is the wrist is a funky injury. Like, this is bike racing, and if you start now, the surgery has to go perfectly. The recovery you have to stay really attentive during the recovery and the PT process, because the wrist is think about it. Your wrist is right there, whether you hit a bump or it just hit the road, you never know. You hit a big pothole, like that wrist, you'd almost, you know, pick five other places to have a fracture. The wrist is a tricky one. You got to be careful.
It is. It's like you say, Lance, it's going to depend now on, I'm pretty sure the surgery is going to go fine. The recovery, we don't know. But I suspect, I mean, if it's a break that has to be operated on, we're sure it's going to be in place. So they're sure about that. They don't have to wait, you know, for 3-4 weeks to see if it's healed properly. And, you know, avoiding the vibrations.
Right.
Gotchar will be back pedaling, probably not on the road, but he will be back pedaling in the next week, within a week. And he was going to take a week off anyways.
I agree. I broke my wrist in Torrey, California in February 2006, I believe it was. And, you know, it's like you said, you know, it's like about a week off the bike. You're on the trainer. Then a couple of weeks, 3 weeks in, you're outdoors with a cast. And obviously all the breaks and the fractures are different. But our good friend Ramin Modaber operated me the next morning as soon as possible. Lance flew me home. Thank you, Lance, for giving me a ride back in California that day. You probably don't even remember.
I want you to say that again, because
he does some nice things once in a while, kind of
nice and goodwill shit that I've ever done. I love it when it gets many have forgotten. I mean,
you were retired at the time.
Yeah, that $500 million for Livestrong. I don't know. A lot of people forgot about that. and not a penny for Lockjaw. But I did.
Yeah, you happened to be in LA. You retired in 2006. I crashed in Torrey, California near LA. You texted, "Hey, bro, you good? And let me fly you home." So I jumped on the Jizzy in Van Nuys to Greenville.
You know what? Look here. Just pat myself on the. I don't even remember that.
How are they able to get these surgeries lined up so quickly? Like the next.
Well, you just got an OP. I mean, Ramiz Modaber was the running doctor.
Yeah. One of those surgeons in Belgium are lined up.
But I think he'll be fine. I mean, obviously it's not ideal, but the season he's had thus far, the type of athlete he is, he's the best doctors in the world behind him. I don't think this will be an issue for the Tour de France.
Yeah, and I think you know, if you're in really good shape like him, the recovery normally goes pretty fast, and you know
and he's young. And he's young. Yeah, let's not let that pass. I mean, we know, a young body heals significantly faster than even one that's 10 years older. So it's got that on his side.
Absolutely. Sure.
Johan, let me ask you a question about, because I was thinking about this, because of course speaking of Tadej Pogačar, we saw him just destroy everyone in the Tour of Flanders when, you know, you couldn't have imagined that 10 years ago. We're not living in the day and age of Eddie Merckx that did every race and won every race. We're living in this day and age. So you never would have imagined that he could have won a race like that, right? But when I watched Remco today and just how much power he has and how dominant he was, and also coupled with the fact that he grew up in Flanders, is that a race? And I'm just speculating here, but is the Tour of Flanders ever a race that ends up on his calendar, especially in light of what performance like Tadej had?
He said last week he wants to do it in the future.
Right. I would imagine. I mean, they're not really dissimilar. He's got to watch what Pogačar did and thought, I got to try that at some point. And he has the added luxury of having grown up there and has that sort of inside course knowledge and probably...
Well, you know, he came to cycling quite late. You know, let's not forget he was a football player until he was...
Still, you're driving, or even if you're driving around with mom and dad, or you're... Driving,
oh, yeah. I mean, listen, and his dad was a professional rider. So he knows.
He's
been watching the races on TV since he's born, for sure. You know.
Yeah, and he's Johan, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's won the Tour of Belgium. Obviously not Tour of Flanders, but a lot of the sections are the same. He's no doubt can handle his bike very well. He's very good at positioning. Clearly has the power. I see no reason why he cannot win the Tour of Flanders.
And I don't think Patrick Lefebvre, not that you want to be that desperate and force a guy like Remco to do a race that he may or may not really want to do, but Patrick Lefebvre has got to go back to the drawing board in the most of these spring classics. And let's just be honest.
I don't agree with you, Lance, there, because I think that team is changing identity. And look, for a second year in a row, Remco saves the spring campaign of his team. but listen, this guy is a potential future Tour de France winner.
Agreed.
I would rather change my team towards that type of team because there's obviously some kind of, I mean, I'm not going to say guarantee, but there's a huge potential to win the Tour with him in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can I just say one thing too, though? When you say, and I agree with you to some extent, I do agree with you that his win today did salvage their spring campaign. I will say, I think if you had to grade their spring campaign, even considering Remco's win today, I think it's a B-. I think it was a straight F before. So Remco got him from an F to a B-. Patrick Lefebvre at the start of the season you're not happy with a B minus in the spring campaign.
It's of course, you know, they've been beaten on their playground. You know,
right.
So obviously they're not used to that. That's obviously not the same as we've seen in the past. But you know what? There's five monuments. We've seen we had four monuments now, right? They've won one of them. You know,
that's a B minus.
There's 14 teams there's 15 teams who didn't win a monument.
I understand, but this is we're talking about Quick Step. We're not talking about Cofidis or EF or any of these second division teams, right? We're talking about Quick Step, right? It's a B minus.
Yeah, no, I think a part of not winning a monument in the Cobbled Classics, I think it was basically their absence as a team in the front of the race. You know, winning or being second or third is not the same as being where they were. They were not a factor in any of those races. So I think that's there. I agree with you that he's obviously not happy about that. Now, how is he going to change that? I don't know, because he will have to invest more and more in a team around Remco. And then, you know, the guys for the classics will, you know.
Alaphilippe's contract is up. He's going to have
Well, that's an interesting thing. It's not up, actually. That's one of, you know, let's talk about that for a second. And I don't know if you guys saw after the race, we've all seen that Patrick has criticized Alaphilippe one time really heavily a few months ago, now again. So he came to Liège and Alaphilippe said, hey, you know, I want to do everything I can for Remco. He did, I think. He did to the best of his abilities. I think he did a great job. You know, he crashed in Flanders, didn't race for 3 weeks, was injured. But the handshake between Patrick Lefebvre and Alaphilippe, did you guys see that after the race?
No.
No.
You know, there was a lot of hugging and this, and then Patrick and then Alaphilippe came together with another teammate, I think. You know, they were obviously happy. And there was a handshake of Patrick. It was not a hug. So I think there's some, you know, the relationship is quite cold there, I would imagine. And I think personally, you know, if you look at it from a business point of view of Patrick Lefebvre, I think, you know, Alaphilippe, and I think I've said this already on one of the other podcasts, we already have seen the best of Alaphilippe we're going to see. You know, he's still going to remain a good rider, but he has a big contract and he has a contract for 2024. So I think it's very likely that Alaphilippe, even with the contract, is not on Sudal Quick-Step next.
I agree with that. And I could even see a mutual, you know, agreement where he gets a massive contract from a French team. Everybody wins.
Total Direct Energy.
Yeah. And Lefebvre is along.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, so it's still, let's, you know, we're being a little hard on the guy. It's still a Hall of Fame career.
Absolutely.
But if he stopped today, so yeah.
I just got to point out something you get on this show you don't get anywhere else that I know of. Johan analyzing handshakes.
Jamie, I didn't want to go there. I thought he'd launch into like a defense that'd take another 5 minutes. But yeah, the man has an energy vibe. You know, I think it's one of these energy.
I'm impressed.
Soothsayers, but. Yeah. Hey, before we forget, this is for real, and I think if we had to, across both pelotons, the men's and women's peloton, the rider of the spring campaign, it's got to go to Demi Vollering, right? The week she just had, winning Amstel, Flèche, and Liège, and not getting lucky, right? Dominating, and JB, we have an update on that as well, but. What a 8 days she's had.
Doing exactly the same as her team manager now, Anna van der Breggen, is the only woman who's ever done that before. She's also her coach, and she rides very, very similarly to Anna van der Breggen. Amazing. And I think she's going to be the dominant rider for the rest of the season, even in the Grand Tours.
Interesting.
Last year there was a few stages in the Tour de France where she was close to Annemiek van Vleuten. You know, Annemiek van Vleuten is almost 40, if not 40 already. We see that she's not getting back on the level of last year. Mm-hmm. And I think
don't count her out though.
She has bridged that gap, I think.
Yep.
Agreed.
Yeah. And she's coming on the shoot. JB, remind me.
Tomorrow morning.
That is so damn cool.
Yeah, I know. It's Ali and Mari reached out to Demi Vollering after her first win. And she's like, I can do it after the, that's a busy week, right?
Right,
I can do
right.
it after these races wrap. So when she is committed to coming on our the move, we didn't know she was going to win the next two races. Right. So we're super stoked to have her on tomorrow.
You know, it's Ali. She is, get out of the way.
And we had, so we have the winners of all the big races. You know, we had Allison Jackson for Paris-Roubaix, thanks to Mary. And now Demi Vollering, the winner of the last three races. So
amazing.
They set the bar really high.
The men got to step up the game here.
They set the bar really high. We need to figure out something, guys.
No.
I hate to spoil it for you guys, but they've got a lot of friends in the current Peloton.
Exactly. George, we're looking at you, George. We're looking at you.
Yeah, exactly.
Get on it. I'll get on it.
One of them is like Voldemort, you know, so it's also makes it a little easier.
I gotta share with you guys something else, a very cool project. Johan and I discussed it on the last couple of shows. You guys were on your trip, but we are partnering again with Operation Get Out and going to help another community, much like we did with the kids in Uvalde. And George, this is more your neck of the woods, but Teleco Plains in Southeast Tennessee, not far from Chattanooga, which we'll all be out that way next week, but just a very impoverished, struggling area, 53%. Of the residents live below poverty. 42% of kids under 11 are living below poverty.
Crazy.
Right? And so, and also a big chunk of these kids, 53% of these kids live in a non-traditional home setting.
Mm.
They're living with grandma, grandpa. They're living with non-family members.
Right.
Tough situation, but we're partnering again. If you want to go to wedo.team and you can donate, $250 buys a kid a bike and a lock. We actually found out about this community from one of our move listeners who loved what we did in Uvalde, said this is an ideal thing. And so we're all over it. And it's a much more modest goal than last time, $55,000. I know we can get there and help these awesome. Kids get on a bike. We still get the feedback from Uvalde, kids all over town on bikes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So changed forever, hopefully. So anyhow, good. If you can donate, go to wedo.team. You'll see the icon up there on the top of the site.
Good on you, JB. All right. So are we done? We're kind of done with this for a while. We got some, I don't want to say, I have a surprise trip coming up. You guys might have to take the Giros or the weekly coverage of the Giro. Johan, I haven't talked to you about this yet. George, I gave George a sneak peek. I know he gets sensitive when I don't tell him first or tell him fast.
Well, I don't even know anything. So,
right,
I'm gonna have to be really pissed off with you then.
It looks the high likelihood I'm headed down to Australia on Wednesday for a fun little mission for a few weeks, with the church, of course.
Well, I mean, you know, the time difference is going to be definitely a challenge for the podcast. So we'll
I'm not too sure about connectivity, but
we got you covered. Don't worry.
We'll see how this plays out. Nonetheless, it's been fun this spring campaign. We've seen some incredible performances. I mean, none of these, you never really ever get lucky in monuments, but sometimes you do. We just saw a bunch of badass and impressive rides, both on the men's and women's side, and that's the way you want it, right? You typically want the best man or woman to win, or you do, and we saw it.
Yeah. And, you know, what a morale booster for a guy like Remco, you know, to go to the Giro with this guy, with this performance, you know, being one of the two big favorites.
Well,
it's going to be another interesting head-to-head, you know, Evenepoel against Roglic.
Yeah. But he put a lot of pressure on his team. I mean, there's nobody else in that race. They're just going to be like, hey, man.
Roglic, you know, Roglic won three times the Vuelta. He was second in the Tour. He was third in the Giro. He wants to win the Giro again.
Right.
And he goes with a strong team.
Yeah. A lot of pressure on Quickstep. And it's bike racing. We saw what happened with Pogacar today. Remco's got to be careful. The Giro is a sketchy race. Can at times be really nervous and dangerous.
But it is, you know, I keep being impressed with this, you know, this relaxedness on the bike of a guy like Remco. You know, he knows he's good. He sits there. You know, he looks completely in control all the time. feel bad for his teammates. They have to work so hard, you know, to get him to a point where they basically they can launch him. But the guy is incredible. I mean, he has so much power, so much power.
Yeah. Well, like we said earlier, we missed a potential, potentially one of the best of all time. That duel at the end would have been epic.
Oh yeah, that would have been amazing.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Not just today, but all spring season and always for that matter. And we'll talk to y'all soon.
See you soon.
Thanks. Vamos.